Shagel. First off, people call me Paul Delarone, but that's my slave name. My real name is Dekarungdage, which means two trees or two logs. I come from a community. Originally, I came from Ganawage, but like many others, in 1974, we left what people call the reservation. We left the reservation because of all the problems that existed, and that as someone who was raised in a traditional environment where in a home the language was first. We spoke the language of our people. We were forbidden in the home to speak English. Everyone in the family, we learned to speak English when we went to school. And so I was growing up with traditional values. We tried to maintain who our ancestors' teachings that they passed on to us. We tried to maintain that. And we have a long history in our community, like in Ganawage and many of the other communities, how our ways were outlawed. And where, you know, the work was done to discourage us in our language, in our culture, our traditions, and not to be able to live by our own laws, by our own ways. And so, growing up with this, at an early age, I got involved in all of the different issues in the community, such as many others. And always we were having to fight. But a lot of times our fight wasn't even with so much directly with the outside, but our fight always seemed to be from within. Is that we had, many of our people, when you look back at our history in Ganawage, many of our people went to the church. And some of them went because they did adopt Christianity. But the majority of the people who went to the church went because they were tired of being persecuted. We could not practice our ceremonies. We couldn't, we were constantly condemned by the church. And so in order for people to kind of have some kind of peace and some peace for their children, people went to the church. But even when they did go to the churches, they lived in a lot of ways to our ways, because when you saw the people go to the church, they still sat in their clans. The masses and so on was done in our language. And people in the community worked very hard to translate the songs and the sermons and so on into the language, trying in every way to maintain who we are. But through time, the government and the churches took the children away to the residential schools and so on, and just added to that process of making us extinct as a people. And so now, after so many hundreds of years, and that back in the 50s, my grandfather and other elders led a movement to try to take us back to our homelands in the Mohawk Valley. And at that time, the elders had little knowledge of the outside laws. They knew their language, they knew the ceremonies, they knew our laws and our ways, our teachings. And so when we went out there, I was just a young boy, and we went out there. We were there for a little over a year, and they dragged our people into the courts and so on, and eventually we got evicted from our homeland. And so we had to go back to the different communities. And all that time growing up, I was asking my grandmother and my grandfather, why did we leave? Why did we leave? And they said, someday, if you listen well, someday we'll return. And so it came to a point growing up on what was referred to as the reservation and having to go through that education process and seeing all that was wrong, that nothing was ours. that our whole lives were being controlled. And now our lands were being overrun. And we had a lot of non-natives coming into our community and occupying the lands, getting the government grants, getting band numbers. And meanwhile, our young families, native families, were having to live here in Montreal or some other community. And now we had 2,600 of these people living in our community. And so our people had enough. And they said, this has to stop. And so the old people met and they talked and they decided that we would have to rid our community of all the non-natives so that our young families can come home. And we met opposition, of course, from the band council. And this was the traditional council passed this, and the band council opposed it. And at the time, John Kwe Chan was the Minister of Indian Affairs. And what they did was they brought in the SQ, and they came in and they tried to prevent us from carrying out these evictions, but we did carry out the evictions. And everything was done peacefully. People were given notice, 30-day notice, but if anybody needed more time, they just had to come to the elders, and the elders would have granted them more time if they needed it. And so most people were cooperative, but few of them were encouraged to resist, and they were encouraged by the band council. And so it ended up, they brought the police in, and we ended up with confrontation. We had riots. We flipped their cars over. The guns came out, and our situation got almost worse than ugly. And so during that time, now there's division in the community. And it was then we decided, because if we would have continued, we would have had a civil war. And this we could not allow. And so we decided, and that this was a Warrior Society project, is that we would, if we're so determined to keep this struggle, but the thing is that we didn't want to fight with our own people. We didn't want to spill the blood of our own people. And so we decided that we would go back and reclaim a part of our ancestral homeland. And we knew that if we went to Canada or the United States government and we said, restore some land back to us, we know they would not do that. And we were not about to go into their land claims courts because we don't believe in their courts. We know that's not our way. We know that they have no jurisdiction and no right to judge another nation. And so we decided we'll just have to do it the way they did it. And so we organized, we gathered food, we gathered tools, we gathered our families, and we took our guns. And we chose an area that was not occupied. It was considered New York State Park lands. Because our fight was not with the everyday grassroots people. And so we went into an area that wasn't occupied. And we took the land. And we wrote a manifesto. And we had people go to the United Nations, and we synchronized the time of our getting back into this area and distributing that manifesto to all the embassies in the United Nations to let the world know that we were going to retake our homelands, part of our homeland. Because in the United States, what's called the United States, 9 million acres is Kanyagahaga territory. And almost the equivalent here on the north side of the imaginary line. And so we took this land and we declared that this was going to be the beginning of the rebuilding of our nation. And so we passed several laws when we first started. Number one, there would be no drugs, there would be no alcohol, because this has been a great part of our downfall. And also, we would not allow for any outside religions in our country. And also that only traditional or traditional-minded indigenous people of this land would be allowed to live in this territory. And we had to do it this way because the fact is our people were facing cultural extinction. Our language was facing extinction. And the thing is that everybody talked about self-determination. But the thing is, somebody else was setting the rules for what self-determination is. And we said, no, we, our people, are going to determine what the process will be to rebuild our nation, to work to revive our culture, our traditions, and to assert our sovereignty and our laws, and to protect the territory. And so we had support, and we had representation from over 500 different indigenous nations. And they came, ready to stand with us, shoulder to shoulder, not to back us up, but to stand shoulder to shoulder with us to protect us and what we did. And we ended up in those mountains for 3 years under siege. And we were determined and we were not going to give up.